We are talking about the most basic, fundamental, and also the most difficult and essential intervention in ERCP, so the cannulation.
Welcome to the ESGE podcast, Endoscopy Unplugged. Join us each month to hear the latest from European experts and where we'll discuss relevant clinical topics and provide you with tips and tricks, practical scientific evidence, and pearls of wisdom to inform your endoscopy practice. So please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join us as we advance GI endoscopy care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of ESG's podcast, Endoscopy Unplugged. My name is Ian Grelnick, past president of the ESG, and I am your host. With Endoscopy Unplugged, we're starting at the beginning, tackling some of the basics of GI endoscopy. Then, further down the series, we will, of course, be getting into more advanced topics. Today's podcast is titled ERCP Mastery, Expert Tricks for Seamless CBD Cannulation, and I'm very happy that my guest is Professor Torsten Behne, Chief Physician at the Evangelical Hospital in Dusseldorf, Germany. Torsten is a world expert in advanced endoscopy and has published widely in pancreaticobiliary endoscopy, both ERCP and EUS. Welcome, Torsten, to the podcast.
Good morning. It's a great honor and pleasure for me to be here today. I'm really excited to talk about one of the most crucial and fundamental aspects of ERCP, the selective CBD cannulation. It's a step that often determines the entire outcome of the procedure.
It's great to have you here. Before we get started, I just want to ask you, how did you choose to become an advanced endoscopist?
After my medical school, more than a decade ago, I had the chance to move to Düsseldorf and work together with one of the pioneers in therapeutic endoscopy, and in particular HPB endoscopy, Horst Neuhaus. We worked together for more than a decade, and this was a great opportunity and chance.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know Horst well, and he's a fantastic endoscopist, and he's a fantastic mentor. You're very lucky to have him with you for that period of time. All right, so let's get at it right now. Let's talk about achieving CBD cannulation, and let's first talk about general technique. In your opinion, what most influences successful CBD cannulation?
We are talking about the most basic, fundamental, and also the most difficult and essential intervention in ERCPs, the cannulation. And high rate of safe biliary cannulation probably defines the good endoscopist. And here we have to consider that here quantity breeds qualities. We have to take care of our experience, of our numbers. So when I approach one patient for ERCP, it's very important that we are very clear about the indication. This is everything, because we know that ERCP is more prone to complications. So be clear about the indication. And then we have some basic steps that we have to follow. First is patient position. I put the patient usually in a prone position, or at least a prone oblique position that provides a more stable position. We try to get a stable, short position in front of the papilla. So I usually start the procedure only after I reach this position, to have a papilla centered in front of my scope. Then prepare everything, have a look at the papilla, take care of the peristalsis, and have everything in place.
What do you use if there's too much peristalsis?
So in Germany, we have two options. We can use Buscopan, or we use glucagon. Both are very useful. Glucagon has the advantage that it has not a big effect on the heart rate. So this is sometimes more convenient.
So you have your indication, the patient is in a prone or semi-prone position, everything's ready to go, your scope is in a short position, the papilla is right in front of you. Your first line is, I assume you prefer a sphincterotome with a guide wire. Is that correct? As a non-ERCPist, I'm asking you.
Yeah. So this is true. So as we know, we should go for wire-guided cannulation first, because we can reduce the rate of post-ERCP pancreatitis. And then we have to consider also the papillary anatomy. Usually we have an S-shape morphology of the CBD in the intramural portion or the intrapapillary portion. So to have sphincterotome that can be bended and an hydrophilic guide wire is, in my eyes here, the ideal combination to start with.
Okay. And what if you, you know, say you start and you're just not able to get in? And how would you sort of define, okay, this is a difficult cannulation, what's going on here, and what should I be doing now to get access?
So luckily, we have very good guidelines coming from ESGE. So let's go a little bit through this. So we have a very clear definition of a difficult cannulation. We should consider a difficult cannulation to be trying to cannulate longer than 5 minutes, to have more than 5 contacts to the papilla, or to have more than 1 unintended cannulation of the pancreatic duct, either with a guide wire or with contrast injection. So this is the 5-5-1 rule that we should follow.
Okay. So what's your escalation sequence? You've tried the 5-5-1 rule, you've passed it, things just are not going right. So what's your next step?
So first, I think it's important that we start our procedure in a very structured way. We start with a synchrotome with a hydrophilic guide wire, and then we approach the papilla, we cannulate the biliary orifice. Let's have a look at the papilla beforehand. We can see where the biliary orifice is. Probably the CBD goes into 11 and 12 o'clock direction, and then we can align our sphincterotome towards the estimated position of the CBD. And if all this fails using a banded sphincterotome, what I usually use as a first cannulation step, then we have to go one step further. And in the end, this is also related to the fact if I'm able to put the guide wire into the pancreas. So this is the first step. If I have the wire in the pancreas, we can use pancreatic guide wire assisted techniques. And if it's not possible, then we have to go for other techniques. So the third option should always be that, considering the indication for ESCP, that we consider postpone the procedure for maybe for another day. And this is always an option, or let somebody else with more experience try to do the procedure. But depending on the pancreatic guide wire, we can go for pancreatic guide wire techniques, or in case we don't have a pancreatic guide wire, we have to go for pre-cut techniques, usually needle knife pre-cut. So according to literature and also guidelines, fistulotomy should be preferred, but this is not possible in every patient, I think. I start with needle knife from the orifice if I have to do a needle knife technique.
And with the pancreatic duct guide wire, some people call that a double guide wire technique. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we have a couple of options here. So once we have the guide wire in place, we can also consider situation if we have a difficult position in the duodenum, probably if we have a juxtapapillary diverticulum in place, something difficult, I would already go for double guide wire technique when I have the guide wire in the pancreas for the first time. If I consider that we have a good option to do a primary CBD cannulation, then I will pull it out at the first time I see the wire in the pancreas and try to cannulate again. So if I have the wire in, I have more or less a double guide wire, and this is my preferred technique in case we don't have a very small type 2 papilla. Then I'd leave the guide wire in place and cannulate alongside with a sphincterotome and another guide wire into 11 and 12 o'clock direction, because now using the pancreatic guide wire, the intramural and the interpapillary part of the papilla is straightened. And this usually leads to a very high success rate. And if we have a small papilla, we have the option to do a little bit of transpancreatic. Somebody called it sphincterotomy. I more or less call it septotomy, because we just want to open the septum between the pancreatic and the biliary orifice and cannulate after that. These are the options. And the third one is that we put a pancreatic plastic stent that we have to put anyway, because once we have the wire in place, we have a high rate of post-SCP pancreatitis.
Right. So let me backtrack maybe a little bit. So before you start getting into trouble, what do you notice about the papilla or other anatomical features that may say to you, ooh, this is actually going to be difficult, and this is not going to be a straightforward CBD cannulation?
I think the first step that we have to consider is the patient itself. So if we are dealing with a patient that has a high risk of complications. For example, young female patients with a small papilla, we have to be aware that the risk of complications is much higher, in particular for post-ESCP pancreatitis. Then the second step is if we can reach a very good stable position in front of the papilla or not, if we are dealing with a stricture, for example, tumor infiltration, juxtapapillary diverticulum, then the papilla itself, according to the Harrodson classification, usually type 1 papilla, the standard papilla has high success rates, but type 2 and 3, so the very small, tiny papilla, and also the ones protruding with the long intraduodenal segments that, according to literature, we can predict around 50% difficult cannulation and 10% failure of cannulation. And this usually also goes hand in hand with increasing complications. These are probably the points we have to consider beforehand.
So let me just briefly summarize. So if you're having difficulty and you need to go to like step two, step three, so your step two is the double guide wire technique. Your step three would be a needle knife or a pre-cut. And your third one would be a transpancreatic septotomy or fistulotomy. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I prefer the needle knife only when I don't have the pancreatic wire. Sometimes it's necessary to put a pancreatic plastic stent, and then you could go for needle knife. That makes it safer because you already have the pancreatic stent in place.
Tell me a few things about how do you minimize, especially in these more difficult cases, pancreatitis risk. You've talked about that you should be placing a pancreatic stent. What else can be done by the endoscopist?
As I mentioned before, so dealing with a young female patient, sphincter dyskinesia, and small papilla, these are more or less red flags for me in my practice, because I know here we have to stop earlier and follow the guidelines to early escalation of our therapy. So importantly, if we have difficult cannulation and a recurrent passage of the guide wire to the pancreas, we always have to put a pancreatic stent, and then we could also consider of fluid therapy. So there are a couple of options. So usually we don't do high volume hydration of our patients, because we know that hydration, to giving more fluid than we usually do, can reduce the PEP rate. But we do it in particular if we cannot give the patient rectal indomethacin, the backbone of our PEP prevention strategy. So we give it to all our patients that don't have any contraindication.
Right. And you give that routinely prior to starting the ERCP, correct? The rectal indomethacin?
Absolutely. So we know that it only works if we give it from the rectal route. This is our routine that we follow in our practice.
Okay. So let me switch a little bit. Now, what about the patient who has altered anatomy? How do you approach those patients?
So nowadays, we have a couple of options, and these depend a lot on what the altered anatomy is. First is that we have to be clear about the surgery that has been done before. So we should have a look at the reports beforehand. So usually in daily practice, we see patients after BIROT 2 resection on the one hand, and the other ultimate situation is that we have Roux-en-Y wide gastric bypass. So usually in B2 patients, we can go for endoscopy transluminal approach as a first line approach, because we know that we can, in most of the cases, reach the papilla with a standard side viewing duodenoscope. Sometimes it makes sense to start with a gastroscope, a forward viewing endoscope beforehand to have a look at the anatomy, but then most of the cases we can reach it, and then we can use standard instrument, standard cannulation. The only difference is that we see the papilla from the different side, so we have to consider this when applying therapy. So, and then the standard Roux-en-Y reconstruction, we still see success rates, high success rates of device-assisted enteroscopy, ERCP using double balloon, for example. But depending on the overall situation of the patient, we can consider already here to go for EOS-based techniques or percutaneous access. EOS guided transmural approach, the edge procedure is nowadays first line. So a lot of things to consider beforehand.
Can you explain to the listeners the edge procedure, what edge means and what it is?
So after the advent of the lumen opposing stents, we now have the option to reach the excluded stomach from the stomach remnant or from the adjacent jejunal limb. So This is a two-step procedure. Usually we create an EOS guided gastrostomy, or in cases if we don't have a remnant stomach anymore, if we can we have patient with anatomy, we sometimes do gastroenterostomy for that. But in edge procedure, we do a gastrogastrostomy, put the lump stent in place. Uh-huh. If we go as a single step procedure, we have to suture the lumps to the gastric wall to avoid stent migration.
Are you actually suturing it or are you clipping it?
Nowadays, we do both. Sometimes we suture it, sometimes we use the stent fix clip. The most important thing to consider is before you go back with your scope, put in a safety guide wire to save your access. Even if the stent migrates, you can just put another one over the guide wire.
Okay.
So, and this is the first step. Then we dilate the stent, or we wait for at least 2 weeks, and then we come back with a standard side viewing duodenoscope, pass through the new gastrogastrostomy, and then can reach the duodenum in the more or less normal way and perform a normal ESCP here. This is very convenient and a safe procedure nowadays.
Okay, great. That's a great explanation for the uninitiated. So are there other times when you're going to switch actually to EOS guided biliary drainage? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I think nowadays in hepatobiliary pancreatic endoscopy, ERCP and EOS are no longer divided. So should be provided by the same person in the same room in the same setting. I think this is important development in our field. We see also we have the option in case we have an accessible papilla, we can go for EOS rendezvous procedure. So in our center, we have the option also to perform percutaneous biliary drainage for rendezvous. So we can use EOS for rendezvous procedures in case of failed biliary cannulation. But in inaccessible papilla, we have the option to use a gastrointestinal anastomosis to make our way to the target site, what usually is the papilla or the biliary enteric anastomosis. But we also have the options of antegrade interventions. For example, in patients in whom we were not able to drain the left side of the liver, for example, in cholangiocarcinoma, we can do a palliative hepaticogastrostomy of the left side, but we can also perform in patients with benign disease after complicated surgery, for example, stricture of the biliary enteric anastomosis. We can do hepaticogastrostomy from the left side using plastic stents, using multiple plastic stents, like the multi-stenting concept from the antegrade approach. And nowadays, we also see that in case of distal biliary obstruction, most of the cases in malignant disease, we have the option, again, with the lumen opposing metal stent here to perform a US-guided choledochoduodenostomy. That can, some say it's easy. I think it's not so easy and should be done only by experts in the field to do a choledochoduodenostomy if the bile duct is dilated large enough, at least 15 millimeters. I'm not sure if the lump stents are here the final and best option, but we have now the option to do so.
You brought up something I think really important. You said now today, a person who does ERCP also needs to be facile in EOS. And I agree with you 100%. You have to be able to do both. I'm going to take it a step further. Do you think we've reached the point in advanced endoscopy training? This is a little bit off of our subject, but still related. That when somebody's training in advanced endoscopy procedures, have we gotten to the point where there's sort of a division between you're either going to really do your advanced endoscopy training in pancreatic or biliary, including ERCP and EOS, and then there'll be others who will be more focused on luminal resection techniques and luminal advanced endoscopy. Have we gotten to that point?
So the answer is a little bit difficult for me because in Germany, we don't have that yet. But I would strongly recommend that the development would go into this direction because it's getting so specialized. Yeah. On the one hand, Lumina resection technique, ESD, and so on. This is really challenging. And on the other hand, we see we have a complex field in the HPB field, where first, of course, we have in the training, you have to learn, of course, how to cannulate during ESCP, but also how to handle guide wires, how to handle stents. And these are very important steps when you proceed to interventional EOS, because usually the first step is only EOS, so the puncture of the duct to put in the guide wire. And from there, it's more or less ESCP, and sometimes vice versa. So I think the development should go into this direction. And the training of EOS, after you are able to do a very good diagnostic procedure, that's still very important to have a good overview, a good orientation to how to use your echoendoscope, and also how to do FNA, FNB. This should be included in the training, and then the training should go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because we've gotten to the point, like you say, things have become so sub-specialized, really, that if you try to learn everything, there's a saying in English that you're jack of all trades, but master of none. And I think we are at that point, that division. Torsten, this has been a great podcast. Your knowledge is incredible, and you do a great job of explaining these difficult procedures in very easy language. But before I let you go, I do want to ask you, what are you doing in your free time when you're not doing ERCP? And do you follow sports teams? Do you play sports? Tell our listeners what you're doing.
I know I'm also very, very much into sports, so I like to do it and follow it. So as endoscopists, we sometimes forget that our job is physically really demanding, and we do long procedures, sometimes in awkward positions, and do fine motor work. So ergonomics really matters. So for me, staying fit is part of being able to do endoscopy and this job very well. And so I run on a regular basis. I take my running shoes, as you know, everywhere I travel. And I love playing tennis. I love playing football and go skiing to keep my shape. But more importantly, also it keeps me mentally balanced. And also, I love to watch soccer and also American football.
Oh, really? Who do you follow?
I followed the Kansas City Chiefs quite frequently. So Pratik Sharma managed to bring me into Arrowhead Stadium. So from that moment on, it was the Chiefs. So,
and your Kansas City Chiefs are not doing that great right now. I think they're 6-6, and they're close to being out of the playoffs, which is a big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But they're doing better than my Minnesota Vikings, because my Minnesota Vikings suck this year. And it's a pain to watch them. So listen, Torsten, thank you again for being here. It's been great having you here. It was a great podcast, and have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Endoscopy Unplugged. If you found this podcast useful, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more about the European Society of Gastrointestinal Endoscopy, for example, to browse our scientific publications, interact with our online learning portal, the ESG Academy, or learn about becoming a member of ESGE, visit our website, www.esge.com. And of course, your feedback is always valuable to us, so send us your thoughts via podcast@esge.com. Thanks for listening, and join us next time.